Coming up on Tech News Today, Snapchat says no thanks to Facebook's billions of dollars. MapQuest is back, and Windows Desktop on your Kindle. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, November 14th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT11. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zachar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we all assemble in one place every day to bring you the top stories in the tech world, starting with the news fuse. Wall Street Journal reports, according to people briefed on the matter, they're getting so creative with these things, that Snapchat turned down a $3 billion acquisition offer from Facebook. And the journal reports Tencent, makers of WeChat, has been looking to invest in Snapchat as well and values the company at $4 billion. The briefed people also apparently say Snapchat CEO Evan Spiegel wants to wait until early next year to entertain any offers, believing the company will be a lot more valuable by then.
Google's latest transparency report, which shows government data demands, shows that the requests have doubled in the last 3 years. The report covers the first half of 2013. It even shows that the number of U.S. demands has increased to nearly 11,000 compared to 8,500 or so requests in the previous six-month period. So quite a jump. Globally, the total number of requests is at a new high of 25,879 due to a combination of interest in services like Gmail, but also, of course, the increase of people online around the world.
It's alive. It's alive. ISIS, the mobile wallet platform, is alive. It's launched nationwide in the U.S. today. Now, ISIS is backed by Verizon, T-Mobile, and AT&T. An updated version of the ISIS mobile app is also available in the Google Play Store with a version for each carrier. ISIS is supported on over 40 smartphones. Now, if ISIS isn't your cup of tea, a startup called Coin has developed a new device that can hold all of your credit card data on one device the size of a credit card. The magnetic stripe on the device is dynamic, and it uses 128-bit encryption. You can pre-order one right now, and shipment is expected in summer of next year.
Laptop magazine's Avram Pilch reports that Intel announced the company will start opening some retail pop-up stores, starting with one in the Nolita neighborhood of Manhattan. That's near Prince and Mott Streets, opening November 23rd. The stores will feature demos of Intel-powered devices, along with free coffee, free movies once a week, device loans, and events with local makers. The stores are temporary and will close down by January 25th.
Google's eight-year copyright battle with the Authors Guild over Google's controversial decision to scan more than 20 million library books and make them available on the internet is over, and Google won. New York, U.S. Circuit Judge Denny Chin ruled yesterday that the book scanning amounted to fair use because it was highly transformative and because it didn't harm the market for the original work.
And absolutely amazingly cool news, IBM has released an API that would allow developers to have their apps use IBM's Watson as their back end. Now, Watson's made up of over 2,800 servers, can analyze natural language, and it's probably best known for its appearances on the game show Jeopardy. This could allow for a whole new class of apps that could take advantage of Watson's power.
Finnish phone maker Yolo, the company with that Sailfish OS offshoot of the old Mego OS, will release its first handset for €399 in Finland on November 27th. The devices will support Android apps and come with the independent Yandex Android App Store. GigaOm reports Finnish carrier DNA has partnered with Yola, along with Chinese distributor DPhone.
Russia-based Yota Devices has been working on a dual-screen Yota phone, which is unique because the front of the phone has a traditional LCD screen and the back has an e-ink display. Well, finally, the company's announced the Yota phone will launch internationally before Christmas. Earlier this year, the Russian company was confirmed it would start the mass production process with the help of a manufacturer in Singapore called Hi-P.
Ship or ship not. There is, get it, because it's good. Thanks to Captain Kipper and our subreddit for submitting this one. U.S. Senator Jay Rockefeller submitted a bill Tuesday to the United States Senate called the Consumer Choice and Online Video Act, which would prevent ISPs from blocking, degrading, or otherwise impairing any content provided by an online video distributor, including by implementing usage-based billing. It's a pretty comprehensive bill. Other clauses of it would make TV networks negotiate fairly with any online video providers who want to carry their content, and even, it seems like, would make services like Aereo specifically legal.
The HP Chromebook 11 is no longer being sold at Best Buy after reports that a number of chargers overheated. Google and HP said they are pausing the sales of the HP Chromebook 11 while they look into the matter. If you already own one of these laptops, Google says to avoid using the original power supply. The Chromebook 11 uses micro USB for power, so you've got lots of options.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by ProXPN. If you're out and about in the world using Wi-Fi unprotected, you're risking your, well, at the very least, you're risking your Facebook login. But you might be risking a lot worse. Don't be out there doing banking account stuff. And definitely use a VPN. That's what I do. When I was talking about this earlier this week. I was at BlizzCon this weekend, and I was using ProXPN because I was on a bunch of open Wi-Fi access points at the hotel, at our guild hall, out on the show floor. Got to try it. ProXPN is a virtual private network that works with almost any internet connection. 512-bit encryption tunnel works by OpenVPN or PPTP, and it protects you. Your content is not seen by those on the network besides you. Bypasses geographical restrictions, works with your iOS or Android device. They've even got a brand new Google Play Store app that supports OpenVPN. And you can configure it for Linux as well. World-class customer support. Steve Gibson gave it a great review on Security Now. So give it a whirl. Go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year. But we've got a special offer. Use the code TNT and you'll receive 20% off the lifetime of your account. It's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. If you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. So go to proxpn.com/twit. Sign up with the code TNT. We thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today. They've been great pals and great providers of VPN. I got the little icon right up there right now. All right, joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, it's always good to have John Falcone, executive editor from CNET, on the show. How's it going, John?
It's going great. Thanks. Great to be here with you guys again.
Thanks for joining us. We got some interesting stories today to round up. Let's start with that Snapchat one. Wall Street Journal reporting that their sources, now this is just Wall Street Journal reporting sources, not an official thing, but they declined a $3 billion offer from Facebook. That immediately reminded me of Facebook, famously, in 2006, declining a $1 billion offer from Yahoo. And later on, it came out that Zuckerberg said, yeah, we want $2 billion. Basically, Peter Thiel revealed later on that Zuckerberg was never really going to take that offer. He's like, we're worth more than that. We'll turn around. And all the venture capitalists at the time were like, are you sure? Okay, I guess we're going to believe in the founder here. Seems like the deal with Snapchat is a little different. New York Times has a story reporting that Benchmark Capital is sort of behind this, encouraging Evan Spiegel to turn it down, saying, look, you guys are going to be worth a lot more money, even if you get acquired, but we think you can make money. The way Snapchat-type apps have been making money in other parts of the world is not through advertising. It's through selling stuff. It's through selling stickers or subscriptions to things. Kakao, Line, WeChat, all of those, that's how they make their money. So round of funding in June valued Snapchat at $800 million. They're talking about turning down $3 billion. And they've got venture capitalists saying, I know you're not making any money, but you will and you'll be worth more. Bubble, anyone? John, is this just the way of things or this sound familiar?
I mean, it sounds too familiar. I was thinking all the way back to actually Pointcast. Remember that was like first. So Rupert Murdoch offered those guys like $400 million in the late 90s. They turned it down, tried to do their own IPO right as the crash started and just faded out in history with, I think, zero at the end. So I would never turn down $3 billion. I'll just say that.
If anyone is thinking of offering John $3 billion, don't worry that he would be rude and turn it down. And that's a good way. That's a good way to set it up, right? $3 billion. Well, the good way to set it up is actually, is this Pointcast or is this Facebook? Because it turned out to work out just fine for Facebook to turn down $1 billion.
Well, if a Facebook is so all-encompassing, I mean, Facebook could easily build in, and it, in a way it has. Well, if you count Facebook Poke as its own little entity. But, I mean, there are Snapchat-like functionalities that Facebook could incorporate, but I don't think it's fair to compare the two at all. I mean, Snapchat has a very specific way of communicating with people, and it's all sort of based on the fun of communication being temporary, but also not having to save monotonous pictures that you might take throughout the day that you want to share with friends. So it's a way to communicate that I think would be one way that a company like Facebook could add to its experience, but on its own, I think it's a standalone, very interesting app. A lot of people laughed at it at first. Oh, it's for sexting, or oh, it's for children. And actually, it can be extremely compelling. That said, $3 billion, I mean, that's three Instagrams.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. Three Instagrams. $1 billion to easily, you can put ads into Instagram, not something you probably want to do with something like Snapchat, where it's like, hey, you just got a new message, and you click it, and it's McDonald's. It's not exactly something that lends itself to advertising. Snapchat seems like it's more in line with Line, where you would have a subscription where you would pay every year maybe like $1 or $10, so you can keep using their services uninterrupted. I think it's insane that Snapchat thinks they can get more than, or they're worth more than $3 billion, other than the fact they might want to protect their brand, because Facebook's not exactly in the favor of teenagers at this point, because they want to have things private. Things on Facebook and Twitter are causing kids issues with college admissions. So you want to have this closed kind of network. And there could be a fear for Snapchat, this idea of if you go into Facebook, then they might lose their branding. But $3 billion? Why would you turn down $3 billion?
That's what makes me wonder if these sources the Wall Street Journal's talking to are crazy. Like, would Facebook be able to get away with paying $3 billion for Snapchat?
Probably. But I just don't know. Snapchat is I would call it a some sort of a height of a bell curve. You know, I don't know that Snapchat is going to get a lot more popular than it is now. It's kind of like, I don't know, it's like a Candy Crush of photo sharing. Sure. I guess it could explode, but I feel like it already has. So how does it become so much more, so much worth more than $3 billion? It's not like they've got a huge team there. It would be a fantastic exit for the people who work there. But again, it's not all about money, I guess.
I think you nailed it, because I think the problem with Snapchat isn't that they couldn't figure out how to make money. There's people making money off these types of apps. It's how long can it continue to be popular?
Right.
Because these are the kinds of apps that fall in and out of popularity with the trends, not long-lasting platforms. I may be proved wrong. A lot of people thought the same thing about Twitter, and it's stuck around as well. We'll see. Next story is an enterprise story, although it might be that your next desktop that you use at work won't be on your desktop. This is interesting. Explain.
Yeah, so Amazon introduced a new service called Amazon Workspaces. Now, it's going to give you access to a virtual desktop on Windows, Mac, iPad, Kindle, Fire, and Android tablets. Now, Amazon claims that the Workspaces Windows and Mac client will provide users with full access to desktop, including support for multiple monitors, audio and video. With a Kindle Fire or Android tablet, you can pair it up with a keyboard and touchpad, and it'll act like a laptop. Not so with the iPad app right now. The service runs from about $35 per month per user, or $75 a month, depending on the hardware resources they allocate to you, like CPU speed, RAM, and applications you get. Some of the more expensive tiers give you access to Microsoft Office. This puts Amazon in competition with Dell, Citrix, VMware, Microsoft. Lots of major players already in this world. Amazon estimates that Workspaces customers would save 59% over its competitors because they're using a particular kind of protocol called PCOIP. John, do you think Amazon just made the Kindle Fire like an enterprise-level device by introducing a service like Workspaces?
I mean, it's interesting. To me, this almost seems like Amazon's attempt to go after maybe even Google too, because I just feel like companies like Google, Amazon, all the ones you just mentioned with these enterprise-focused ones, they're really saying, doesn't matter if you're using Windows, doesn't matter if you're using Mac, if you're using Android, iOS, whatever, we can sell you a virtual workspace. Kind of interesting.
This is definitely a story that if you're really into, you should watch This Week in Enterprise Tech or download it with Father Robert on Monday, because I'm sure they'll be talking about it. And they know a whole lot more about this than I do. But, you know, questions that come to my mind are, has Amazon cracked bandwidth? Because I know they're streaming pixels only, supposedly, and you're just getting essentially an extended display. But when you're talking about an enterprise, when you got hundreds of employees, maybe thousands of employees, that's a lot of bandwidth going through your pipes when they're all messing around. And then there's things about customization. Are the end users going to kvetch about this because they can't download this particular piece of software that they're allowed to download, but it just doesn't work in this situation, or they can't customize the desktop? I think it makes sense for Amazon probably to get into this play, because Amazon Web Services are all about like infrastructure as a service. But it's not a lock to me. And again, I don't follow this industry as closely, but it's not a lock to me when you have a lot of competition like VMware out there and others, Citrix, that you would immediately pick Amazon, although they're saying it's a lot cheaper. So maybe that makes the difference. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's more of a targeting newer, smaller, nimbler companies where it's, mm-hmm. yeah, you've got more than a couple of employees, but you're not necessarily locked to any sort of enterprise-level solution. I mean, there may be a group of 10 who are like, well, I mean, why is VMware our solution? And if we can save almost 60% using something like Amazon, and you've had good experience with even, you know, what am I, SaaS?
Software as a service.
As a service, yeah, I always forget what that stands for. If you have a good experience with Amazon in the past, I don't know, this could be your solution because you don't have another one that you're looking to replace.
Yeah, and Amazon's always been very clear about the fact they're not making money on the hardware they sell when it comes to the Kindle Fire, the Fire HD and HDX. If you have that HDX, I remember seeing the specs on it, it seemed like almost, I wouldn't say overkill, but it was extraordinary for what it is and the price. If you have these devices that Amazon can get out at a low price, especially if purchased in bulk by a small business or a large business, and they're continually getting payments, because that's all they care about, and that's what they've said in the past. We want people to pay us when they use the device. By providing a service like this, I'm thinking this Fire and the Fire HD, they become the devices that enterprise people could use, which would be a huge shift, because otherwise you just think, oh, yeah, I'll watch a movie on this, and then I'll look at IMDb X-Ray. It'll be really cool. But you could actually do some serious desktop computing based on Amazon's backend.
Yeah, I think Amazon would like that to be true. Definitely, you know, if they could envision people using their Kindle Fires to get work done at home with their virtual desktop, that's very appealing. We'll have to keep an eye on this. Like I said, watch Twiat if you want to know more. Intel opening retail stores. Now, Laptop Magazine said that Intel Business Line Manager of Mobile and Communications John Wallace announced this at an event last night. More details are supposed to come with an official announcement from Intel, but the first one opens up November 23rd in Little Italy, in the Nolita, the north of Little Italy, actually, neighborhood. Other locations will follow. They didn't say how many yet. Stores will only be open until January 25th, but as I mentioned, free coffee, free movie every Friday, lectures from local speakers, used gadget recycling, maker-oriented events, and it's almost like a little hackerspace thing they got going on. They even say they'll loan out some gadgets to people to take for a test run. You can order things from within the store. It doesn't sound like they'll have a lot of stock. It's more like a demonstration space. So what it makes me wonder, John, is this a test run at Intel saying, hey, we would like to do what Apple and Microsoft and Sony are doing and have stores? Or is it just a clever marketing push for the holiday season?
Sounds like more of the latter. I mean, Intel's problem is they don't make any end user consumer items still. And unless they want to go that direction, it's great if they have a nice place where they can highlight an Asus and a Dell and an HP and everything else. But ultimately, they don't really have control of the message.
It's definitely a good location. When I heard the story, I'm like, Princeton Mont, I used to live by there. It's actually within a half a mile from the Apple store in Soho. So if you have people who are like hanging out by the Apple store and they're just walking down the block, they see this Intel store and they're like, okay, what's in here? If you can actually play with gadgets and have that experience you have in an Apple store, it would be more familiar. But it's that mindset and that crowd, that area, I think that actually is going to get some interest. But like John's saying, Intel doesn't make anything for consumers directly. They just have to showcase their products.
See, I feel like it's sort of a weird neighborhood. I mean, Nolita is awesome, but it's like, I think of it as high-end clothing mm-hmm. and cool shoes and some funky furniture stores and people who are very hip.
With lots of money.
That's true. Mm. But is the Intel pop-up store a good fit?
Ultrabooks, super thin ultrabooks that cost thousands of dollars, or tablets that Intel powers, or those kinds of things, maybe. But I remember that area. That's a pretty pricey area to be in.
Yes, pricey. I just don't know if this brand fits there. I mean, sure, you can sell anything for a lot of money.
It depends on their presentation, right? Like if they just have buckets of like buckets on the table, like you know, like a thrift shop of tablets, might not be the best idea.
Of chipsets, actually, it's like, just is that a bucket full of chips?
That's a bucket of Pentiums. Yeah. That's right. So these are clearance, of course. It depends on presentation, I think.
It seems like the whole let's have a retail outlet and see how it goes is just really popular mm-hmm. with varying results depending on the company. So I'm not going to say that they can't put together some wonderful pop-up store in time for the holidays, but it just seems a little odd to me.
Maybe it's a wait for your spouse and or partner to finish shopping at the other places kind of place with the free coffee and the seats and the browse around. I mean, and that way you
Intel,
get some products because the
people you're tired of walking.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like
so get inside Intel. Intel inside. There you go.
The other problem they have is it could be like this Microsoft store. Didn't they have a midnight launch of the Surface 2 tablet and, mm-hmm. you know, only 20 people showed up, basically?
What if you gave a store and nobody came? That's why they're going to do free coffee. They're not worried too much.
It's also an end date for this, right? If this was a series of retail experience stores and they just were going, like, this is going to be like the Gateway store, which I know is a bad example. But the idea that if they had tons of them, they were going to live forever, that would be a problem. The test market, I think, is all right. We saw Google do a bunch of kiosk stuff like at airports and inside Best Buys and things like that. I guess the difference here is that Intel's not bothering to go inside of another company like a Best Buy or some other electronic shop. The pop-up stores seem like they're a nice little trend. At least they didn't build a barge, you know?
They couldn't. Yeah, this is a lot cheaper. This is a lot more cost-effective. I still wonder whether it's intentional or not, if Intel doesn't come away with this saying, hey, wait a minute, we don't sell any consumer products, but we are inside of so many consumer products. Maybe it does make sense for us to do more retail type efforts and take a little cut on the other end of the supply chain from where we sit. That may be just ridiculous, and then this may prove that it's ridiculous, this experience here. Well, as with all of these things, we'll just wait till January 25th, 2014, and see what they do after that. Let's take a quick break. Thank our sponsor for today's show, Squarespace.com, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy for even design-blind idiots like me to create a beautiful website. I thank Squarespace each and every day for my own websites that I run on there, like TomMerrittBooks.com, that look good because of Squarespace. And the best part is, once you get into Squarespace and you start using it, I've been using it for years, they just keep getting better all the time. They keep adding things that you're like, gosh, you know, I love Squarespace, but maybe this could, the next thing you know, they've got that thing that you wanted to work differently, working differently. They're always adding new designs too, even better support. They have more than 20 new beautiful templates in there. Incredibly easy to use with 24 hours a day, 7 days a week customer support. And it starts at $8 a month. It includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience, too, that matches the overall style of your website, but still makes your content look great on whatever device people are using, from a phone to a tablet to a laptop. Hosting included, they take care of all that. You don't have to worry about the downtime and the reliability and the allocation of the RAM and all those things you might deal with, even if you buy rented space on another host. Squarespace does all of that for you. Start a trial with no credit card required. Just start building a website. Go to squarespace.com. You can do it right now while you're listening. And when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code TNT11 to get 10% off and to show your support for Tech News Today. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today, so why don't you thank them too? Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. MapQuest. No, it's not gone. And in fact, it's got something new. What is it,
it's
Sarah?
It's a very modern, flattened, iOS 7-friendly mobile app, Tom. It's funny. I went on a road trip with a friend recently, and she's not a real technical person. And she handed me over some printed out MapQuest directions. And I was like, come on, really?
Because she's a hipster?
No.
Okay.
No, maybe this was not ironic. This was just haven't caught up yet. Still printing out stuff. Fine. But that's sort of what I've always equated MapQuest with. It's just a little bit of like, it's the Maps 1.0 of the internet. Mm-hmm. According to Comscore, though, MapQuest still has the number 3 mobile app and the number 2 map service for desktop users. So, hey, there are a lot of people who say MapQuest, that's the map service that I like. That's the brand that I remember. Over 40 million monthly uniques in September from MapQuest, including almost 31 million via the desktop and 14 million on mobile devices, which also includes tablets. So, hey, that's a pretty interesting market. Multi-platform users are about 4.3 million. So those are people who both use it on the desktop and as a mobile device. So the company has come out with a lovely iOS 7 ready mobile app. And in fact, it will only run on iOS 7 just because it's so tightly integrated. So you've got your navigation, you've got your real-time traffic data, links to local businesses. Voice sounds a lot like Siri when she's walking you through how to get from point A to point B. I hung out with MapQuest quite a bit this morning, just sort of looking at stuff around my neighborhood. I didn't feel like the local businesses were entirely up to date. There are a couple restaurants really near me that didn't show up. There was another one that closed down about a year ago that did show up. But in general, there are nice little quick links to see where the nearest gas station is to you. And if there are accidents or you know, stuff that I probably could get a lot of use out of when I'm commuting to TNT in the morning. And it's really nice looking. I mean, I kind of couldn't find anything wrong with it. You've got clearly marked different types of streets by color, which kind of is almost like an old school map experience. So highways are blue lines. Main streets and cities are shown in yellow. Arrows have been added to one-way streets. So it's pretty nice to get around in. I'm just not sure who this is for, because is anybody, besides me, because I just want to know what things look like, is anybody interested enough in MapQuest to think, well, everything that Google has or even Apple Maps has isn't good enough for me. I'd like that third solution. And I mean, it's not even the third solution. It's more like the 10th, because there are other third-party map services. John, have you had a chance to check out the app, and do you have an opinion?
Have not checked out the map, and honestly, I couldn't remember the last time I used MapQuest. That said, you know, if they've improved it to the point where other people started recommending it to me, I would definitely check it out. It's just such a competitive space.
It's definitely pretty. I think the timing is a little bit a problem, because when the whole Apple Maps debacle happened and Google Maps was no longer the default Maps app, this would be the time for any company that had a map to show up. And MapQuest could have done this a little earlier. Now, the fact that it runs on iOS 7 and later, I mean, I don't think that's the majority of the devices just yet. It does show a forward kind of thinking there.
No, but I think it is, isn't it? Isn't iOS 7 like on the majority of iPhones?
It's on majority. I thought it was 35%, but that might have changed. Things change every day, so I'm sure the chat room will let me know. But when it comes to the application's very nice. I mean, the idea of remembering MapQuest exists is kind of like remembering, hey, oh yeah, Yahoo Mail. We could use that too. It's a really competitive space, and I think Google's got the leg up with Waze. When they bought Waze, they have more data. They can be up to date constantly versus MapQuest. So they, like you're saying, Sarah, if there's some outdated information about stores nearby, that's not going to make you want to use MapQuest. It's going to make you want to use Google Maps.
At the same time, though, if you are like many people who are still using MapQuest, particularly on the desktop and printing out directions, and you have a short time with something like an app, maybe you're getting your first smartphone, and you're like, oh, cool, this looks like the service that I've used for a long time. Maybe there's a lot of potential market there. I don't see a lot of us switching over. But you know, the people who are still sort of like real-time navigation on my smartphone, okay, let's give it a try.
I look at MapQuest and I listen to your story about, you know, sort of the idea of what demographic might be using this. And the fact that they're making it look more like paper maps makes me think MapQuest knows that that's the kind of, because we don't care anymore. Those of us who are used to using Google Maps or Apple Maps or Waze, that's not appealing. But somebody who's like, I still like the old paper map. Oh, MapQuest has that same look and feel. That's comfortable to me. That makes a lot of sense to me. The thing is, I don't see them doing anything that would make me functionality switch to MapQuest, right? Because Waze can do amazing magical things about routing me around traffic. And Google Maps is incredible at being able to just type in like vague words and it knows exactly what you mean and where you want to go. Even Apple Maps has improved drastically since its launch. So I just, I think they know what their core market is and they're going after that. A couple of minor facts here. iOS 7 adoption, according to Mixpanel.com, is at around 75%.
That's crazy. Right now. That's amazingly fast.
It's faster than iOS 6 adoption, apparently, according to a few of the stories. Also, in the chat room, there was some confusion. When Sarah said it's iOS 7 only, it means that if you don't have iOS 7, you can't use it on the iPhone. There is an Android app update out there as well. I'm surprised, Ayaz, that you wanted to talk about an Apple rumor. Why is that?
I'm a stylish fellow, Tom. I like to talk about watches.
That doesn't surprise.
It's really about the approach. There's a rumor about Apple's upcoming smartwatch, and this approach is unusual compared to everybody else. I wanted to talk about that. The idea is, according to an analyst who's got sources inside of Apple, he says there's going to be a 1.3-inch screen for women, a 1.7-inch screen for men, so two different size displays for their smartwatch. This is according to David Shi of NPD Display Research. The report says it's unclear whether the watch will use a flexible display. And there's been a bunch of rumors about this device. Obviously, it's not out yet. And Apple's never said anything publicly about it. But an October report says it would launch with a flexible AMOLED display in late 2014. That had the displays at 1.3 inches and 1.6, so slightly different sizes. The Korea Herald says Apple and LG are working together on flexible OLED screens, although LG wouldn't be the only provider of screens. And the watch would be a standalone product. It wouldn't need a phone, an iPad, or any other connection for it to work. Pricing estimates between $150 and $229. So, yes, these are rumors. But assuming they're true, that's this two-size approach, which we haven't seen from Samsung. They have that Galaxy Gear Monster watch. And it's a whole bunch of other watches out there. If they're true, John, what do you think of this iWatch?
I think two sizes would be a smart way to go because that is feedback we get from some of the existing products that they just seem too big, especially for women who want something just more stylish, honestly. I also think this market is Apple's to lose. You know, if you look back at that square little iPod Nano they had two years ago, I mean, that was kind of halfway there already. Throw Bluetooth in there, a wristband, a better battery, and a way to deal with notifications, people would flock to that product.
I also thought the old Nano was actually the right size for that. When they switched up the size,
exactly.
I was like, why did they do that? Because they were very close to making a wearable at the time, and people wanted it to be wearable. I just think that with all the influx of this, we've seen a lot of hires from the fashion world at Apple, and this seems like it's something that if you're a tech company, if you're a consumer electronics company, you're like a laptop for all, a television for all, a watch for all makes sense. But if you're talking about fashion, you're like, wait a second. Glasses come from men and women. Watches come from men and women. Why not a device like this? The rumor just seems like it would make sense from a company like Apple. And that's the kind of thing that got me very interested in this story. Because if there's two sizes, I think that actually gives them a leg up in the competition because...
You know, the other important thing here is the new iPads, same product, two different sizes. The MacBook Airs... 11-inch, 13-inch, exact same CPUs, exact same capacities. I mean, they're kind of already doing that in their other categories.
I also think, I mean, yes, in general, men and women tend to wear different things, and sometimes there are daintier wrists involved. You know, if you're talking about different sizes, but it doesn't really have to be like a gender thing, right? It's like do you like a larger, bolder look? Just think of like traditional watches that are, you know, designed with, you know, diamond encrusted faces. I don't know. Some people just want a little bit more bling. Some people want something a little bit more understated, glasses as well. So I think it's kind of interesting to compare them to laptop sizes. What do you like? Apple's like, we don't care. Just buy what you want as long as you buy it.
As long as you buy it from us, exactly.
Yeah.
And we should reemphasize, this is the Korea Herald reporting a display search estimate, which is probably coming from talking to sources at suppliers. These things can be misunderstandings. They can be plans that they only know part of or that change over time. So this is not an official announcement. But then when you look at it, Apple and LG working together makes a lot of sense. Apple and LG have partnered on other things in the past. Apple making a watch makes sense. They've said as much that they're investigating wearable computing. We also have other analysts saying that their suppliers are telling them Apple has shifted the Apple television product down the roadmap and a wearable is coming. So none of this would surprise me if it ended up being close to true. I do think that you have to be careful looking at it, but a flexible AMOLED display could make a lot of sense for Apple. I think we got some good points there. Let's switch from fashionable to sporty, Sarah Lane.
Yeah, so this... Yeah, so Under Armour is a brand. It's Armour with a O-U-R, although they're based in Baltimore, not the UK as I originally thought. Under Armour is a apparel company, sports apparel, and they have bought Map My Fitness, which is a really popular app. It's an app that's used in a variety of ways. It's kind of a cross-platform mobile solution. They've bought Map My Fitness for $150 million. I was interested in this because I thought, well, Under Armour is a company I've never heard of. Where are they based? They're based in Baltimore, Maryland. They have products like shirts that are, you know, wick away moisture from, you know, long distance runners, athletic shoes. And the company says, well, we want to get into the digital space. We want to become a premier sports company, and we believe in the future of the quantified self as it applies to fitness, especially since we've got all these rumors about smartwatches and wearable devices, and they're just not going away. So they're being kind of proactive about that. Map My Fitness, Leo and I have talked about it on iPad Today, is wildly popular. It was launched in 2007. It's based in Austin, Texas, where apparently it will stay even after the acquisition. Has 20 million registered users, 9 million monthly, 700,000 daily. Kevin Plank, who is Under Armour CEO, says, athlete biometric measurement is a new business. We're just getting behind. And what's nice about Map My Fitness is that it's a little open-ended about how Under Armour can use it. It has an open platform, works with more than 400 devices. It's growing. The company says about 200,000 new customers sign up each week. No word on profitability, but if Under Armour already has a healthy business selling wares, well, I could see this folding in nicely. I think what's interesting is, you know, what's going to emerge as the next kind of fitness superpower? You've got Nike, Adidas, Jawbone, Fitbit. Those are all becoming more and more household names that are synonymous with wearable devices that track your fitness. Yeah, it's also sort of an apparel thing, but they've all got their own proprietary solutions. What can a company like Under Armour do with Map My Fitness to emerge as, you know, another player that doesn't really have that stronghold in the retail space? John, what do you think?
So Under Armour actually already has a wearable tech device that they announced a few months ago, but it's very sort of hardcore and aimed at, it's actually like you strap it to your chest while you're working out in the gym.
Oh, so is that looks like a wrestling belt. Is that what that is?
pretty much, yeah. So it's not for casual exercising at all, like Fitbit and Fuelband and those other things. But, I mean, Sarah, you basically just said it. You know, these guys already have a great brand in this field, and they want to extend it into the gadget world, which Nike has done a really good job with Fuelband, even though I think you could say it's arguably not the best product in the category anymore.
I think Under Armour had a deal with AT&T. That's an old story I found, and that does look a bit like a heart rate monitor with a bunch of arrows on it. So it does look a bit like a wrestling belt. But yeah, this makes a lot of sense. Fitness technology is a huge industry at this point, and if Under Armour is going to get attached to these things, you're already used to wearing their clothes. So now if they can embed flexible electronics in there in the future, or if they have things to track it with an app, that makes it a more cohesive solution. We've seen Nike go from just a clothing to fit to their fuel bands and their little shoe trackers, all those extra things. It's an interesting area of technology that's blowing up, because it's just people love to have something to motivate them. So if Under Armour has this Map My Fitness app on top of it, it could be a big deal.
Yeah, it seems like it's a Nike play, right? Nike got into this early and said, we're not going to just be a fitness apparel company. We're going to be a fitness measuring company for you. And Under Armour is a little late to the game, but not a bad way to get into it by buying something like Map My Fitness and working it into a nascent device system. Every sporting publication has advertisements for Under Armour with big names. You see folks when they're at practice sessions in the NBA or batting practice in baseball. If they're not in uniform, they're wearing Under Armour. So they've got a huge name in the sports community, and I think it makes sense. It's a Nike-like brand out there, just a little more limited to the sporting world maybe than Nike, as Nike is pervasive across a lot of different categories. But this makes a lot of sense to me. And they probably need to do something like this if they want to stay competitive. Shall we launch a randomizer? We got a straw poll today, and 47% of you, there were four items, so 47% is the winner, wanted to hear about a laser-guided beard trimmer from Philips that Huffington Post calls bafflingly and unnecessarily high-tech. I question the word laser. You guys take a look at this. We found it on the Philips site. It shines a line of light on your face.
Okay, okay. Like those self-leveling things. Now, I trim my beard in a specific pattern. I could see the usage for this. It's a little bit absurd, I will say that. Is it unnecessary? Probably. Or if you're going to sell razor blades, or you're going to sell handles.
Is it unnecessary if precision is your goal?
Well, there's some designs I would never attempt.
Have you ever seen Riff Raff's face? I mean, he could use something like
this.
Who's this? Oh, he's a rapper. But he has a very interesting beard. Also,
yeah, the styling takes a long time. So if you can have an accessory there as opposed to holding a level the other way, I would never even think to use a level. If they're gonna put it in there, it looks neat.
It totally looks neat.
It's like beard, does have a weird
beard. He has. I'm telling you, I don't know. I think it's cool. It's like I don't know. Laser. Yeah. See.
That takes
see?
Practice.
I know.
I
immediately
like
thought
that.
Of Riff. Yeah. When I, you
that's
know, see
Tom's
something like
next
this.
Halloween costume right
I'm probably
there.
Probably going to tweet this at him.
I lose a bet to Justin Robert Young. That's what you'll see on my face soon.
Nice.
John Falcone, would you do this to your beard?
I got to admit, I'm kind of intrigued because I get a little uneven here sometimes. So, sure. Let's laser it up and see what happens.
Laser up, brother. All right. Let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Gazelle.com. Are you thinking about getting a new iPad or maybe a new iPhone? Well, Gazelle wants to buy your old one. Yeah, even if it's broken, they'll make you an offer. Go check it out. Don't believe me? Go there. Sell your iPad, your tablet, your iPod, your MacBook, your iPhone. Choose an iPhone. Tell them what carrier it's on. Tell them the capacity, what model it is. Be honest. They're going to check it when they get it. But like I said, they'll even buy the broken ones. Once you lock in your offer, you're good for 30 days. That offer stays. You've got 30 days to figure out what you're going to do to transition, get your data off there, all that stuff. They'll wipe that stuff for you too, but you might want to wipe it yourself. Who knows? And then free shipping. Most items even qualify for a free box. Just send it off to them. Gazelle has paid more than $100 million to over 700,000 customers, and you're going to be the next one. You'll get paid fast with cash. You'll get it by PayPal. You get it by check. You can get it by Amazon gift card, and they'll even toss in an extra 5% if you do it that way. Go to gazelle.com right now. Find out what's your iPhone worth. Take a minute. Gazelle.com. Find out. Do it now. Because your iPhone may lose value the longer you wait. And they would like to have it. And they will give you money for it. Gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Do we have things on the calendar?
Looking forward to tomorrow, Tom?
I am.
You should. Yeah, there's a ton of stuff happening. Amazon is launching its first original TV series, Alpha House and Betas, on Instant Video, starting tomorrow, the 15th, Friday. Also tomorrow, Nokia's 6-inch Lumia 1520 is coming to AT&T for $199. PS4, anybody care about that?
Yeah, some
that's
people.
That's happening, too.
Tomorrow?
Kind of a big deal.
Mine's on the way. My shipping notice finally came.
All right. Well, good. And then Zulily, which is an online marketplace focused on moms, people who like babies, is going to enjoy its IPO on the NASDAQ. Its ticker symbol will be ZU.
ZU on the NASDAQ.
Yo, hey. Gosh, that's why they pay the big bucks.
That's why they don't pay me much more. They might pay me to stop. I don't know. Let's check some emails.
Incoming message.
We got a message from RL. Hey, TNT gang. Samsung, the hardware maker, doing an OS. Isn't that kind of like Google, the software company making hardware? You know, tablets, phones, glass. Mm. I can see Samsung doing this just to send a message to Google. If you hurt our profits in the manufacturing sector by flooding the market with cheap hardware, we can respond in kind with our own software/services. Always good to have a plan B.
So you think it's mutually assured destruction?
It's just a standoff with guns to people's
heads. You better stay out with your Motorola's, Google, or we'll come with an operating system.
Bada bing.
Bada bing, bada Tizen, as they say. Well, that brings us to the end of a lovely show. And most of that loveliness was provided by John Falcone. Thank you so much for joining us, sir.
You're so kind. Oh, thank you.
Hey, what's going on? You guys are in holiday gift guide territory, right, over there?
Deep into holiday gift guide, holiday.cnet.com. And actually, you'll find a lot of gifts under $100, under $50, and even under $25 in the stocking stuffer section that you might not see anywhere else.
Under $25? Really? Wow.
There's some interesting gems there, yeah.
Used iPod socks.
I was going to try to make a joke about how when I worked at CNET, we had cheaper categories, but we didn't. That's actually really good. Holiday.cnet.com. Thanks again, John. Appreciate you joining us, as always. And don't forget, folks, to get in on the action. You can submit and vote on the stories we cover every day. It's not the only source we use when we make the lineup, but we do use it. And listen, Captain Kipper was all over the place. He's the one who submitted the beard story. He had a story in the News Fuse. Give him a run for his money. Get in there and submit some good stuff. S.P. Sheridan's no slouch in there. Habituela Condolce. There's a lot of good folks. I can't possibly name all the folks in there, and you can be one of them. Get in there at technewstoday.reddit.com and join the fun. Also, you can email us. TNT@twit.tv is our email address. You can give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/technewstoday. And the main event, the podcast subscriptions, the show notes, all that good stuff is at twit.tv/TNT. We will be back tomorrow, and Darren Kitchen and Len Peralta will be along with us. We'll see you then.